Hey, America.
Start listening now.
How's it going, Eric?
Good.
Good.
Pretty good.
So this week we wanted to talk about some what-if questions that kind of came up as we were re-watching the 2019 competition this year. So did you come up with any questions for us?
Oh, I did. I sure did.
Ooh, do tell.
I was thinking, what if they... I have nothing. I'm sorry.
What if we cut to the music?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to 12 Points from America, a Eurovision podcast from America, from executive producer Dick Wolf. I'm Eric.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny.
He's still Danny.
I'm still Danny. As we said this week, we're going to be looking at just what-ifs from the 2019 ESC. There are plenty. Contrary to what Eric has demonstrated.
Someone didn't do the homework.
You know what? I did not. No.
It's okay. It's all good.
Before we get into anything too... We're going to actually touch on a couple of current events in the Eurovision universe.
Yeah.
Which is the universe we inhabit.
It is just the universe.
First off, we'd like to remind you guys that we are on Twitter at... 12 points oh god, I've never had to do this before.
Oh.
12 points USA?
Someone didn't do the homework,
oh
Danny.
To Danny's credit, he's not actually on Twitter.
I'm not on Twitter.
So this is sort of like when your Cocker Spaniel tries to explain nuclear physics.
Don't you hate? Don't you hate?
I hate when that happens.
We are on Twitter at 12 points USA.
That's also our handle on Facebook if you want to follow us there. Or you could also reach us by email at 12. That's 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. Hit us up. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, send us some of your what-ifs. Actually, just send them to me, and that way, you know, I'll have some.
Sounds like a bunch of you are already listening to us on Spotify, too. But you can, as we've said before, look at our playlists and a couple of other relevant stuff from each week on Spotify as well.
Yeah, we each have some songs that we love from the contest history, some great national finalists. I actually just put up a list of American singers at Eurovision, the ones that I could even find on Spotify, which is kind of like finding hen's teeth. But we got them. So check us out. Let us know what you think. And if you find others, let us know. But yeah, there's been a little bit of news in the Eurovision world. Yesterday, we're recording this on a Sunday. Yesterday was actually the second ever organization of the Eurovision Choir Contest, which is really cool. It's out of Gothenburg, Sweden. And after a fabulous, fabulous event, we have a winner. Denmark and their choir Vocal Line won this year, with Latvia coming in second and Slovenia's Jazva coming in third.
Jazva!
A really cool thing about Eurovision Choir this year is that Scotland actually had an independent entry.
They sent their own.
They sent their own
one.
Under the choir Alba. They actually performed alongside a Welsh choir, different entry.
I was going to ask if other constituent countries sent their
stuff. Yeah, Wales goes as well.
Faroe Islands finally get their time to shine?
The Isle of Man choir, which they just called Man Choir.
Man Choir.
That's it.
They all have three legs. And just
part man, part choir, yes.
Oh.
A bunch of cats.
No tails. Not a single tail amongst them.
Are there other countries that do stuff like that? I mean, the UK is kind of its own thing because they acknowledge that they're just some constituent countries. But are there, like...
Well, Wales does compete independently, just as Wales, at Junior Eurovision, which we'll see in November this year, coming up in Poland.
Wait, I don't know. Is there any, like, ESC that, like... Is there, like, a... I don't know, like a Chechnya? Does anyone, like, is there any other subnational kind of thing that gets sent to a Eurovision thing?
Not really. Kosovo did send acts to the Eurovision Young Musicians competition, if I remember correctly. I might be getting that wrong. I have to double check.
Where Piano Kid came from?
Yeah, exactly. A couple iteations before that. But yeah, so Kosovo did appear, I think, once or twice as an independent state nation. But no, so this whole Scotland-Wales thing at the side contest is really the first that we're kind of seeing this foray into the subnational subdivisions. It's very cool to see, and it's going to be very cool to see how they develop in the future. I would love to see Scotland sending something in Scottish Gaelic to juniors someday.
Awesome.
Yeah, Wales sings in Welsh. Mm-hmm. It's so cool.
Is it actually beautiful?
It is. It actually really is.
Especially if you like consonants.
Oh. Four L's in a row, people. Four L's in a row.
Wow.
We love you, Wales. So that was probably the biggest news from the Eurovision world from this week. We are still waiting on the selection of the host city for Eurovision 2020. Right now it's currently down to two candidate cities left in the running. We've got Maastricht in the southeast of the country and Rotterdam in the sort of center part of the country.
Not Amsterdam. Not Hoofddorp.
Sadly, no. Not Sergei Toggenbosch.
Yes.
That broke your heart. we should be finding out in the next couple of weeks where we're going next year. So.
It's just going to be Rotterdam, right? It's going to be Rotterdam.
It's Maastricht, and it's so that they can lure everyone back for a second Maastricht Treaty because of Brexit.
It's
very elaborate.
It's a long con.
They stacked the deck for Duncan.
We're gonna send this pretty boy to win Eurovision.
All of Europe's most photogenic, well accomplished, talented singers gathered in one place for a redo of the European Union.
I'm looking forward to when it's Maastricht, and then we can play back this clip of me being like, "It's gonna be Rotterdam," and then you guys will just laugh. And so on. I do think it's going to be Rotterdam, though. It's a bigger arena. There are more hotels. It's considerably easier to get to.
I was going to say, it's not like it's hard for most major cities in the Netherlands to be accessed by rail or road.
The nearest major international airports to Maastricht are like 2 hours away. Either Amsterdam
or Brussels.
Yeah,
Amsterdam, Brussels, or Dusseldorf are all about like two and a half hours away by train. There is an airport near Maastricht, but it's like a low-cost Ryanair's
sure,
or EasyJet's, they fly into there, but there aren't a lot of major direct flights from a lot of major European cities. So if I were a betting woman, which I'm not, I'm a cheap ass, I would say Rotterdam, but by me saying that, I've guaranteed that it's Maastricht. So we'll just let the EBU make their choice.
It doesn't have the logistical problems that, like, in Israel, that, like, hosting in Jerusalem would have had. There's no reason to not have it in
it's wherever you're going to put it in the Netherlands, it's going to be an easier process than what we had selecting a city for Israel or selecting a city for Ukraine. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine.
So, if you listened to the last episode, we mentioned early on.
And I didn't.
It was you. Interesting.
Anyway, in the last episode.
Yeah, in our last episode we mentioned that the 2019 Eurovision Song Contest is available on Netflix and it's super exciting. I have already watched it several times.
They have subtitles, which we didn't have the benefit of the first time.
Yeah, subtitles in English. So if you're, you know, xenophobic or whatever and you just want to know what people
like they
are
dub it.
But,
like
oh my god.
Dub Eurovision.
Can you imagine?
They love it in France.
Yeah. It's like Jerry Lewis.
Like how I'm just imagining like Hatrid Minsigra, but like dubbed over with somebody like completely inappropriate voice. Like,
yes, hangover, yes, never ending. Hatred will prevail.
Is it David Schwimmer doing Europe's the heart Icelandic dub?
Yeah.
Europe's heart in hell.
It's good.
This little cheery, merry sunshine.
Anyway, please
anyway,
go on.
Go on.
Third time I've interrupted.
I don't even know what we were talking about. I remember. So rewatching Eurovision has just brought about more questions. And we've sort of asked, well, what if this was different? What if that was different? And we have a few burning questions I feel like are worth discussing.
Yeah,
worth
the things
answering.
That we've actually mentioned a couple of times. I think we've mentioned all of these things on our little list before.
But not maybe.
And we haven't directly addressed them. I think we've just like mentioned them, or we've talked about them for about 10 seconds. And now it's time to talk about them for 10 minutes each. Welcome to a 90-hour 12 Points from America episode. Hope you guys are following along the timeline bar at the bottom of your screen.
Good luck.
The first one that is on my list, it's one that we've talked about in several episodes, is Belarus's voting issue.
Yeah.
And I think this is the only one that we actually have concrete answers for, is what if Belarus's points had been correctly assigned from the beginning?
All right, so kind of backpedaling a little bit. The issue with Belarus, well, there are many issues with Belarus.
What's the deal with Belarus? I'm sorry. Yeah, TLDR of what happened with them this year.
Yeah. So we found out a couple of days after the broadcast of Eurovision that the jury that was basically put in place to replace the actual Belarusian jury had inverted some scores. That they put their first place song last and their last place song first, and it screwed up a whole bunch of points. We found out after the show had aired that technically Macedonia had won the jury vote when it was correctly applied, rather than Sweden. Sorry, John Lundvik.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, he'll be fine. And this is all due to the fact that Belarus had to cancel their jury vote because of some leaks, because of some...
There were conflicts of interest and things like that.
Irregularity, so they just gone. Due to human error, an incorrect aggregated result was used, according to
the EBU. These things have always come up in the past, and they have always been human error.
Yeah. So...
I mean, Helen Thousand was in charge of Belarus voting.
So, I mean, so if this hadn't been the case, there would have been a couple of changes.
Yeah.
Like I said, the whole Macedonia-Sweden swap.
Mm-hmm. This is at least a numerical thing.
Yes.
So we can resubstitute things into the math, and now we know that North Macedonia should have one jury vote.
Right, exactly.
But what about... So that's just in the final. What
that's
else
in
the final,
final
would have changed?
Well, the only points that the host nation, Israel, actually received during the broadcast in the jury vote were the 12 from Belarus.
Oh, they didn't even get a 1 point anywhere from anyone?
So not only were they the host nation, and the feeling of elation when you receive the 12 points is fantastic. The cameras are in your face, and it's exciting, and even if you're, like, near the bottom, it's nice to know that you have a validation from someone.
Oh, it's all a lie.
And then they got the carpet ripped out from under them a couple days later, so sorry, Kobe.
They got that moment, though. I mean, in hindsight,
it wasn't real
or whatever, but... He got that moment for a second, and he seemed like a nice enough guy.
Yeah,
so.
He was. And, you know, you also are saved for the moment the embarrassment of having 0 points from the jury vote during the broadcast on home soil when you could tell that it was his dream to be there. So it was a nice little band-aid that they ripped off, at least when the cameras weren't there.
Nice.
Yeah. So...
Now, that didn't change placement, though, did it?
It may have.
I think Norway moved down a spot, didn't they?
Norway and Sweden swapped. So Sweden ended up in fifth, Norway in sixth.
So unfair.
The United Kingdom ended up with fewer points than they expected.
Than they expected? Well, how many did they expect?
I think in the broadcast they showed that they had 16
they
points.
They expected at least one for every dancer.
Oh, of course. And they got...
But in the end, their score was not bigger than us.
Drunk. Get out.
Sorry. Okay,
so what about semifinals? Because this is, if I remember right, this is where it would have gotten very different.
They're basically... This is not necessarily a Belarus issue. This is more of just a voting irregularity thing in general.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed that one or more of the jurors from one of the countries, I believe it was the Czech Republic, inverted their own scores as well. You know, put the top on the bottom on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, if it had been done correctly, Poland would have qualified for the final with Fire of Love. Paliche, instead of Belarus's Zina, would like it.
Oh, no, that's a little bit interesting, isn't
it?
I mean, I don't think there's any way they could have known that that's the result they were going to get by screwing this up.
It was such a razor-thin margin.
It was.
Would there have been another song that would have gone through, or was it just that?
I think it was that swap, because Belarus qualified with 2 points ahead of Poland.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That was the one that we knew was a super, super close between a couple.
Razor.
Yeah, Belarus had 122 points in the semi. Poland, Fire of Love, had 120. The drop from 11th to 12th, which was Hungary, was pretty big. It went from 120 points down to 97. So that wouldn't have made a huge difference.
You may have had some shuffling around within the qualifiers, but it's really that 10-11 split that... things would really matter.
That
Polish song,
I think Austria was more deserving than Facebook the song. Eurovision like sending Facebook the song, don't they?
Just as San Marino,
more than a couple.
I think we should talk about that in another episode.
Yeah. Oh,
God. There were also rumors that there was some sort of an irregularity with a televote possibly in semifinal 2. The EBU have dismissed those rumors. You know, you're only allowed to vote 20 times from a single phone line in most of these countries. And the numbers that the EBU received were a little bit different from the numbers that a certain country reported. But that didn't necessarily count, you know, if somebody voted 21 times or if somebody tried to vote for their own country. Or basically, there was a possibility that Denmark would not have qualified from the second semifinal, being replaced by Lithuania.
That's
so
right.
10th and 11th, and there was a one-point swing between them,
mm-hmm.
94 points to 93 points. So, again, we don't have conclusive evidence that this was an issue, but it's when it's that close, if somebody sneezes in the wrong way, it's, you know, anything could happen.
You sneeze, it's a vote.
Nope. See, we're kind of getting off the Belarus topic a little bit.
Yeah,
but
it's all the same thing. All of those, you know, the weirdness.
Yeah.
What if the weirdness had not happened when it came to voting?
Right. So I think going forward, the EBU really needs to tamp down on the jury saying, all right, this is how you vote. This is, you know, double check it, quintuple check it, put one and one, put 24 and 24. Just get
mm-hmm.
it right, guys, because you can save people a lot of embarrassment.
I've heard a lot of people calling for larger juries. We're really getting off tangent here.
Yeah.
But a lot of these juries are like five people.
They are all five.
They're all five people.
All five.
I have nothing against something like that. Like, there's a reason why it's like a jury of critics. It's because like the small panel is what they're going for.
Sure, but
are we talking about like a 30-person jury?
Probably not that many, but
even if it's like a dozen, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Five is a really small sample size.
Yeah.
I mean, what if you just have a small country that doesn't have a huge critical pool?
Then they're all in it.
All
right. Hi, San Marino.
The entire country. The entire country's in
it. Yeah. San Marino's jury is its televote. Anyway.
So roundabout way, if Belarus had gotten their stuff right, then Israel would have been more embarrassed and Macedonia would have had a bigger moment of glory.
I don't think anything super crazy would have changed. It's not
in terms of like the full on results.
Yeah,
no, I mean, if
like Belarus would have done, it's not like Belarus did crazy, and it's not like Austria would have
Austria.
Done. Oh, sorry. Poland. Sorry. Not like Poland would have done crazy good either.
Right. Right.
I think they would have done better than Belarus, but I don't think they would have shaken up the standings all that much.
No.
And Lithuania in over Denmark, I don't think would have made an extraordinary difference.
But then we could have potentially had Poland next to Norway, and we would have had Dear God Worship Overload. Love it.
Mm. And we also would have had more of an opportunity to look at Urias from Lithuania.
Yay.
Yay. Moving on.
Let's stick with the let's stick with the topic of, let's start with before the contest proper. What if Ukraine had actually competed?
Oh, we would have been so entertained.
This is one that I think would have changed things immensely.
Yeah.
The Eurovision party here, just to an American audience, we absolutely love this song.
It won the
vote at the party.
Twin Cities, Minnesota vote by an enormous margin.
And backing up a little bit, we are talking about Siren Song by Maru.
Yes.
For
yes.
Ukraine. So,
this is the very thumpy club jam. Can we throw it to it? Let's give a
let's throw it to it.
That's it. That's our winner. I mean, okay, maybe not our winner, but that is top 10.
There's no way
that would not have made it in the top 10. I think top 5 for sure.
I agree, and it's hard to see it beating Arcade a bit, but it might have.
I think it would have been top 5. I think it would have been the viral moment of the year, if not the decade.
If they'd stuck with like the staging they used in...
They swapped out the staging between the semifinal nationally and the grand final nationally. I would have imagined that they would have gone even bigger, even crazier.
Even more daring.
Let's paint a word picture for our listeners here on what this performance was like.
Bathtubs, leg guns.
Leg guns.
Leather.
Stripper heels, thigh highs.
Mm-hmm. There was a part that kind of reminded me of Human Centipede, but in, like, a good way.
Oh.
Yeah, the Human Centipede is spanking itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you can imagine 6 female John Wicks dancing to a club jam,
Big old farty trumpets in the best way. Gotta love a farty trumpet.
Yeah.
Bang.
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 But it would have been incredible. It would have probably terrified all the grannies watching in more conservative countries. But then again,
That is true.
I think it would have depended if they were before or after Iceland.
Iceland, yes. If they would have gone after Iceland, they would have gone, well, at least it's not Hatrid Munzinger.
But if you put, like, Iceland...
I don't know where that granny was from. I think...
And there's Danny's weekly accent.
She's from Sicily. I don't know. That's Malta. I have no clue.
Maltese grandma.
No,
I like it.
At least it wasn't Hatrid Munzinger.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Maltese grandma is one of my least favorite Dashiell Hammett works. Doesn't have the
punch that we expect.
That's okay.
Have we explained what happened with Ukraine on previous shows?
I don't believe we have.
Have we? Okay.
Maybe a little bit, but yeah, we should touch on... So we've talked about this crazy song and how it...
The reason
why
we know this song is because this song was selected. It was going to be Ukraine's... It was going to be the song that Ukraine would have sent.
Right. Exactly. It was selected through their national final. It was actually a great national final. And Maruv, when she won the right to represent Ukraine, was basically given the choice. You can sign yourself, you know, mind, body, and soul over to the broadcaster and cancel all of the gigs that you currently have scheduled in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Or you lose the contract. And there were a whole bunch of other things. She had 48 hours to decide. The broadcaster, according to Wikipedia here, I'm just reading this, banned her from improvising on stage, communicating with any journalist without the permission of the broadcaster, had to fully comply with the requests from the broadcaster, and she also would have had to finance most of the participation herself, for her and her
Jeez.
Team. Yeah.
Oof.
And if she couldn't follow up with those clauses, she would have had to pay a significant fine. So she basically was given the choice, do I shoot this opportunity in the foot, or do I shoot my growing career in Russia in the foot?
She had to choose between her entire career.
Yeah.
Because, like, she would have had to... All of these cancellations would have derailed her career for a full year, if not two.
Exactly.
Or,
and, you know, very difficult to catch up with that. And so she's like, you know what? I can't do this. I can't in good faith do this. I was honored to be selected by my nation, but you're asking me to give up too much. And then the broadcaster went to the other songs in the national final and says, hey, do you want to go? These other songs.
And they
other
said,
singers,
no, we saw what you did to Maruv.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so... Yeah, the Ukrainian broadcaster basically shot themselves in the foot with this, and they ended up withdrawing altogether, which is a real shame, because there were about 4 or 5 songs in that national final they could have done really well. Maybe not as well as Maruv, but made it to the final.
Made it to the final, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. They have said that they will rejoin next year, which will be great, as long as Russia hadn't won.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
You think... In the event that Russia winning, do you think Ukraine would be kind of this country that would pull out, just wouldn't do it?
Yeah, they wouldn't.
I mean, I guess that's kind of another what if. What if Sergei had won? What would St. Petersburg 2020 or whatever look like? Would we have a...
Ekaterinburg 2020.
Yeah.
Vladivostok.
Oh, God.
Worse than sending it to, like, Sydney.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So do you
see, like, Port Arthur... Port Arthur 2020.
Hobart.
Do you think we'd have a noticeably smaller contest?
I think there would be. I think a couple of countries would pull out, but it
I
should
think
be.
It might have been, I would go so far as to say I think it might have been worse than Israel.
Well, I mean,
worse in what?
We only had
more countries dropping out than
or just general controversy, that sort of thing.
We only had 2 countries dropping out for Israel. One was Ukraine for the reasons I just described. The other was Bulgaria, and that was more for financial reasons.
Oh, okay.
Not necessarily for.
There were no political.
There were rumblings.
Abstainers.
Yeah.
There were rumblings that a couple would. A lot of Icelandic artists declined to participate at the national final.
Mm-hmm.
They solved that problem in a different way.
Yep.
And we'll get to that in a second.
Yes.
All right. So looking at 2009, when Russia hosted, it was in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
there were 42 countries, which is still massive.
The same as this year?
Maybe one larger.
Yeah.
One larger, because, you know, there were two withdrawals this year.
Mm-hmm.
42 is really quite impressive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there have been a lot of performances that I feel like Russian TV would not have been
thrilled with.
Would not have been thrilled with at a lot of Eurovisions since.
That's one thing I wonder about. Like
those two boys kissed in Lithuania in 2014?
That's, for some reason, a Bronx bigwig in the Moscow headquarters of, yeah. I don't know, NKVD TV or whatever they were.
Yeah, I wonder a little bit about about how, like, let's say it's in Russia. Does the Russian broadcaster have much of a say over content, or does the EBU,
I mean,
like,
they
decide everything?
They work together.
Yeah.
But
so,
if
we talked about this sort of thing before, like with past shows, past controversies, is that Eurovision will go nuts on a country for not broadcasting what the contest is.
Absolutely. But there's a difference between the EBU saying, you know, a country has to broadcast the entire show versus the producer saying you can't do that on our stage and broadcast it.
True.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But it's issues like that that make me think that there are several countries that would not go.
Right. Or, you know, decline to, or send a blinder like Hatari for this year.
Yeah.
Sort of semi-protest. Yeah. And when Russia hosted, Georgia almost did that.
Oh, sure.
They tried to send a song called We Don't Want to Put In, P-U-T-I-N.
Clever.
Yeah. And the EBU was like, are you sure you want to do that? And they rejected the song, basically, and said, you have to change the song, you have to change something up, but we're not going to let you in.
What did they send?
The Georgian, they chose to withdraw altogether.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So.
Good for them.
Do you think that the Russian broadcaster, because of the laws towards homosexuality and that sort of thing in Russia, would kind of
try to tamp down on things?
Yeah. I mean, if you're not super familiar, Eurovision is pretty gay. And I feel like if Russia really wanted to clamp down on that and just saying, I'm sorry, it's the law here, we can't have gay stuff on TV or whatever, there could be a really different show, honestly. I'm just saying, I would be concerned they would try to make Eurovision less gay. And that would be unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's like taking the violence out of a John Wick film.
So it would last for 3 minutes and just man with dog?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Just got Lawrence Fishburne talking to people.
Yeah, that's St. Petersburg 2021.
So, I mean, luckily we don't have to worry about that for at least another year. But it raises some really interesting questions.
Yeah.
And also, very interesting context, when you realize that Russia sent Tatu to Eurovision in 2003.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. So.
They were just pretend.
They were just.
They were very heterosexual.
Yeah. But, you know, there was money. So.
Mm-hmm.
Song was good.
Relatedly, let's go back to what we touched on just a minute ago.
Yeah, please.
Iceland.
Yeah.
What if Iceland had been different at all? Actually, what I have written down is, what if Iceland had gone all the way? What if Iceland had taken it all?
So a quick recap of Iceland. We had talked about how there were a lot of rumblings about, I don't know if we're going to go to Israel because it's Israel or whatever. And Iceland was among the more vocal of those. And as it turns out, their solution to that was to send this group called Hatari, who's sort of a musical performance artist, S&M.
Industrial collective.
Anti-capitalist. It was great. They had this song called
also what it was called in the Icelandic.
I know we probably don't need to now that Danny's done that, but can we play a quick clip of that? All right, so you get the picture. Now, Hatari was definitely pretty outrageous and primed to be controversial, as it were. They were very vocally anti-capitalist and generally left-wing sort of views, that sort of thing. But the performances were just this outrageous display of whatever it is. And they did fairly well. They ended up finishing 10th. I will also note, very briefly, the one thing they did that was a bit more controversial, which was...
Than coming 10th,
yeah. When their televote score was being announced, basically what they do is they show the hosts, they say a country, so-and-so points, then they cut to the artist being all excited, like, hey, I got 3 points or whatever, and three more than Germany.
That Germany.
And
instead of smiling or frowning or really doing anything, instead...
As soon as the camera was on them, they unfurled, again, we will note this was in Israel, a scarf that said Palestine. And if you're...
It was the Palestine flag. It was a banner. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The flag was on there. And
crowd went nuts.
Yeah, the reaction was definitely interesting. The TV producers were definitely like, get the camera back on the hosts.
But the sound in the auditorium was continuing for at least another 30 seconds.
Yeah, a few other countries were indirectly booed, basically.
Anyone who follows them on social media, they posted a little video that they had that showed, like, the officials in the auditorium confiscating their stuff and really not being very...
Very nice about
very,
it.
Yeah. As you can imagine...
People that just be like, hey, you know what, man? It just was not cool.
Yeah.
It was not like that.
Yeah. So, I guess, here's the question, is what if they had won? What if that exact same thing happens, except they had to say, Iceland, you got, I don't know... 350 points.
350 from the televotes.
Something that puts them into a huge lead, and they still do that exact same thing. And let's say we go through to the end, they win the competition. Then what happens?
Once the head of delegation stops pooping himself?
Yeah.
I mean, there are two ways to look at this.
Does Eurovision say that they, like, violated the spirit of the contest and they're not allowed to host? Is that a possible thing that they would have done?
That's something I think that would be in their rights to observe. I mean, Eurovision is, by and large, in theory, an apolitical event.
Yeah.
But then again, so is Thanksgiving dinner, but chances are somebody's uncle's going to get blasted and start talking politics. So,
it's my uncle.
Yeah. It's totally yours. I don't know.
Honestly, no, probably not. Shout out to Uncle Steve, friend of the show.
The EBU could have, in effect, sanctioned them. I don't know if they would have sanctioned enough to have punished the entire delegation by revoking a win or revoking the right to host.
You're
being
effectively
more political than they were, I think.
And effectively invalidating the will of Europe.
Yeah.
If they had genuinely won fair and square. There are a couple of things that I giggle a little bit thinking about as it pertains to this scenario. Because there are a couple of things that happen when you win Eurovision. And a couple of them happen immediately. One is there's a handoff of the Eurovision trophy, which would have meant Netta giving the trophy to these Icelandic weirdos. And then there's an encore performance. They would go back up on stage, do the song again to a crowd that would have been incredibly hostile, I would guess.
Yeah.
And very upset about this whole thing.
I want to watch this movie.
Like, this would have been wild.
Mm.
And then, a year later, we're in Reykjavik. Or some tiny town that somehow won the bid, and there's
like 60,000 people.
Yeah, there's a VFW that holds 40 people, and that's where Eurovision is. And semifinal one starts, the lights go down, and you open the show.
Oh, that's right, because we have yet another encore of the song that won last year.
Why are we here? What is the song that brought us here?
Yeah, and it's just that. That is what's going to set the tone for the Eurovision Song Contest.
The answer is, I think it's good that Iceland didn't... I think it's good that Iceland didn't even come close to winning. Glad to see them in the top 10.
But they have come close to winning in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it happened sort of on a 20-year cycle. Oh, a 10-year cycle, I should say.
Mm.
1999.
It's like Pennywise from it.
Yeah, 1999 they came in second. 2009 they came in second. We thought that they were going to do the trend again and come in second this year, but no, it wasn't to be. But they've come tantalizingly close to a win. Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh, can you imagine? Sort of the same thing. Maybe they didn't win, but it was that thing where it comes down to the last two. They're revealing the last country's votes. And let's say it's between the Netherlands and Iceland, and they're drawing this out. Who will win? Did Iceland get enough points to win?
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like
the mood in the arena.
Like, yeah, like they're already working the crowd into a frenzy. And that crowd at that point is vehemently anti-Iceland. And
I can just see
imagine the pop of the crowd when it turned out, oh no, Duncan was fine and that they lost. And the other thing is they have to put Iceland on camera again, which, I mean, they did the Palestine flag thing at a moment when they knew that was the last time they were going to be on the screen.
Yeah.
Because
they weren't
once you do that, you're not getting on the screen again. But in this scenario,
they had to do that.
I wonder if at that point the producer's like, congratulations to Iceland, we'll see you next year, and then just end the show.
Well, considering the show was overrunning at that point anyway, it wouldn't have shocked me if EB would pull that record.
And it looks like Iceland won, and we're out of time.
And
that
we're
was
done.
That would have been wild.
I think they're our wildest what if of the of the whole
thing. Yeah, it's kind of downhill from here.
If only because it was the most unrealistic.
I mean, it's not downhill from here. We have a lot of great content coming. You should definitely keep listening to the show and not tune in to a different podcast.
here's one that we were talking about. You guys heard about this? You read about this?
Mm-hmm.
This was John Lundvik, who competed this year for Sweden. Wrote his own song, but he wrote another song in the competition, and we were wondering what if John Lundvik had brought that song instead.
Yeah, just swap the two songs, basically.
Well, the rumor was originally he had shopped Bigger Than Us, which was, you know, Song for the United Kingdom by Michael Rice, to Melody Festival, and they went back to him and go, yeah, we want you. Can you give us, you have anything else in the tin? You got anything better for Melody Festival? And you can, you know, keep this for another time, but you can't
they know what's up.
Yeah. So,
and he went, oh, I've been working on a little something. It's probably not good or anything.
It's how The Simpsons got made. No, it really is. He was going to do a TV adaptation of Life in Hell, which is a comic strip
that he did. Yeah.
And basically at the last minute, they were like, do you have anything else? And he quickly, like in the waiting room, drew The Simpsons. And now it's been on TV for 30 years. That's what happened to John Lundvik, friend of the show.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that Lundvik would have done better than the UK eventually did. He's just a more seasoned performer. He's a little bit more of an engaging performer than Michael Rice.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to Michael Rice. It's just, you know, let's just call it what it is.
I think he deserved a little better.
He did.
Than he got. By the way, this song that John Lundvik wrote that was performed by the UK finished in dead last.
Which I think
didn't.
Even behind Germany.
Behind Germany, behind Belarus.
They got to get the I'm sorry, no points.
Yeah.
It felt like it. But with this whole situation with Lundvik having two songs, I think it was the very first time that a singer went in with a song of his own and then a song for another nation as well. I think that's the first time that had ever happened.
Sure.
And we also came tantalizingly close to equaling a feat that was only done by Peter Bostrom in 2012, where a songwriter would have the song that came in first place and the song that came in last place.
And we actually came close to that.
We kind of did.
And that would have been Euphoria?
Euphoria for Sweden and Stay for Norway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So close.
Neighbors.
Yeah.
Geographically.
And yet so
and
far.
Far
so far, artistically.
Yeah.
Watch it.
That's some proud Norwegian-American talk over there.
That's right.
Yeah.
How do you think Michael Rice would have done with
Too Late for Love?
With Too Late for Love.
That's a hard call.
Song just moves. It moves so much better.
Yeah.
It's objectively a more enjoyable song. It's more up-tempo. It has a better melody line anyway.
Yeah, I have a much easier time picturing John Lundvik singing Bigger Than Us than I do picturing Michael Rice singing Too Late for Love.
For me, it's the opposite.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. I don't know why. It's just because I think anyone would be able to, I don't know, like muster up the energy for Too Late for Love, because that's a great song. And I feel like anyone with a voice, which Michael Rice does have. Michael
Absolutely.
Rice has
Absolutely.
A great voice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, anyone would be able to do great with it. Maruv would have done great with Bane and us.
So I think that the beauty of Too Late for Love was John Lundvik's interaction with his backing singers.
That is true. That is true.
And it showed he's a seasoned performer, comfortable on stage, on camera, doing his own thing. And I felt that Michael is a little bit greener, technically more ginger, but really more green. And
take that, Michael.
And, you know, he's still getting to know who he is as an artist. Well, John's had a little bit more time to get to know who he is and feel more comfortable playing around and interacting with the backing singers a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they had the right matchup of song artists.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Or song to backing singer, really.
Really quick. Let's play these songs just to kind of give you an idea here. So this is John Lundvik, Too Late for Love. This finished fifth in this year's contest. Hear me, I can be the song that lets your door. And here's Bigger Than Us by Michael Rice, which finished in last place. It's bigger than us. It's bigger than you and me. It's bigger than us. It's bigger than everything we see. 'Cause I can feel the universe when I'm feeling you breathe. It's bigger than us. And so again, the question is, these are both written by John Lundvik, the first singer. What if these are just switched? Do you think John still gets top five?
No.
It is Sweden.
Sweden, but this
it's gonna be a
song,
jury darling no matter what.
This song, I feel like, Bigger Than Us almost feels like a song that John Lundvik, like, I don't know, like, wrote in 5 minutes.
He may have.
I know. I want to do Melody Festival with the song I wrote in 5 minutes. It just doesn't have the polish that Too Late for Love. Too Late for Love seems so inspired.
Yeah, and inspiring. It's
much more genuine, yeah.
Yeah. I think he would have done fine with the juries. I think he would have sunk even further with the televote, which meant his reaction.
Oh, man.
Oh, would have been even more pained.
Yeah,
oh,
the reaction
no.
shot. If he had gotten, in case he what ended up with 90 some odd points.
Something like that,
yeah.
Yeah.
If he had ended up and says, all right, Sweden, you got 37 points.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that would have caused, I believe, instant self-immolation.
Just bursts into flames.
It would have just ignited right there on screen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's for our fire episode.
We'll just have to do another fire episode. It's fine.
Fuego 2.0. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What other questions do you have for us, Danny?
I have two here. So these are a couple of behind-the-scenes things at the bottom of the list. Let's start with Eric's preferred one, and we'll finish with mine. What if Norway had gotten a jury do-over? And the thing with Norway, when they performed, this is the performance that no one got to see on screen.
Correct.
Norway, performing just for the jury in the arena, had something go very wrong with their visuals,
yeah.
with their screen.
Camera shot went completely askew, shot went black for a couple of seconds. It just went completely off the rails. It ended up, you know, getting back together by the end of it. But the jurors, the people making up 50% of the final result, saw an imperfect run through.
More than just imperfect, like a flawed.
Yeah.
Like, not because of any issue with the artists themselves.
Right.
But purely the production.
Agreed. Yeah. Well, obviously it wouldn't have affected their televoting points. It still would have been 291 points, which is amazing.
Of course.
So looking at the numbers here, Norway came in 18th place with the juries with 40 points.
Yeah, which seems
yikes.
Very, very low. Very low.
But I believe that, I think I've mentioned this before, that any juror worth their salt would look at a performance and say, that's not the artist's fault. That's obviously a technical issue. And I don't think they would reflect too poorly on the actual act itself. If anything, maybe it would have caused some sort of subliminal, let's say it's a 10-point swing, that mm-hmm. jurors became 10 points more charitable. That would have boosted them from 6th place to 5th place, because they had 331 in the end, with Sweden's 334.
Eric will take it.
I'm going to disagree. I think, and again, I didn't see how bad it was. I would like to think that jurors worth their salt wouldn't really factor that in, but There's a lot of countries to choose from, and I think it maybe would have stood out more. It would have been a little more memorable. Having said that, I'm not going to say that it would have outright won the competition or anything like that. Again, they finished with 331. The winner had 498 points. So they would have had to have gained basically 170 points from somewhere.
The jury goes wild!
To full-on win the contest. Mm-hmm. I think 40 is a pretty rough number for what was, I think, a pretty good song. I think if they'd gotten 80 points from the jury instead of 40, that would have put them
more right.
That would have put them at 371, which would have been good for third place.
But keeping in mind, look at what the televotes skew towards, what they want, and look at what the jury points tend to skew towards. Jury, let's look at their top five. So North Macedonia, what's the correct source?
Yeah, jury loves individual artists like performing virtuosically.
Right. So it's North Macedonia, Sweden, Netherlands, Italy, and Azerbaijan. Out of those, Azerbaijan is really the only one with any sort of gimmickry going on.
Sure.
It's the most upbeat of them. None of those are full-on retro disco stompers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would have been enough to boost that into the jury top five if it had been a flawless.
But from like 40 to 80, it's not a huge jump.
That's
a pretty
big jump.
And I just love the song.
I know you do. I know.
It seems like it would have gained at least a place, maybe one or two more beyond that.
I think a place is a reasonable guess, considering it was only a 3-point split between fifth and sixth.
Do you think they should have gotten a redo?
If it were me, if I were the one behind the scenes making the decision, I would have given them a redo.
Me too.
What was the rationale for them not
doing
it?
I'm not sure.
They don't talk about that?
I'm not sure they didn't have time
because it was just for the jury, and it's not like there's an audience there or anything.
No, I mean there is an audience in there, but they're not voting.
I mean, like that.
But
yeah, exactly.
But if anything, the jury could be swayed somewhat by the response of the crowd.
Oh, sure, a crowd seeing it for a second time,
right?
Not being surprised by it,
right? Or we know what the song is. We're going to clap along and sing along from the beginning. That could also sway people.
That's
a lot of the subliminal stuff.
Those are good questions as well.
Yeah, so, I mean that's a question I think you'd have to ask His Honor Jan Ullesand.
Yeah.
Friend of the show.
Anyway, the point is, you're all wrong, and Norway would have won.
Eric?
In a correct world, Norway would have won.
And
Eric?
I'm done. See you later.
And you would have to sell a kidney in order to pay for 2 weeks of lodging in Oslo.
And I would have done it.
Oh, boy, yeah.
I would have been happy to do that.
Yeah. When was the last time Norway won?
2009. In Russia.
Danny, what else you got? What do you
all
got?
Right.
Give it to me.
Last one is something that actually gives me nightmares and keeps me up at night. This what if. Is what if Serhat? I mean, we can just kind of stop there.
What if Serhat?
What if Serhat? What if Serhat? Blah blah blah. Enter it with any Mad Lib, and it's worse. But what if Serhat hadn't been sick? Anyone who has watched semifinal or final on Netflix has noticed that Serhat sounds like Pierce Brosnan in Mamma Mia. Serhat was very sick, wasn't he?
He was fighting a cold.
And not in like 1998 skateboarder way.
He was sick!
Yeah, not that.
Yeah, he was affected by what I lovingly refer to as the contest crud.
Yeah.
when you are rehearsing like crazy for weeks on end, you are not necessarily sleeping your normal amount.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with different food.
And traveling.
Furthermore, Israel is very big on air conditioning, which is great.
It's not Turkey.
Not as much, honestly. It's great for your personal comfort.
It's very gauche.
But it's not when you're trying to keep your voice healthy.
Yeah.
It can dry out your vocal cords. The changes in temperature can kind of wreak havoc on a guy. Like Derek and I and a bunch of our friends.
Hi, Derek.
Hey,
Derek.
What's up? You guys are doing great.
We'll let you out of the paddock for this.
Thanks, man.
We were on our way to an event in Tel Aviv, and we were literally on a charter bus with the delegation from San Marino. And we were literally sitting on this bus for an hour waiting for us to go. And it's this highly air-conditioned bus. And we could hear Serhat a couple rows behind us going, "This air conditioning, it's not good for me. It's not good for any of us. Why are we still on this bus? Why are we not going? Can I get off the bus?"
Why haven't you told me that you were on a bus with Serhat?
I have been in very close proximity to Serhat on a number of occasions.
But you were running a bus with him.
Well, it wasn't like...
You could hear the crossword puzzles he was doing.
What?
What kind of crossword puzzles were you doing then?
The loudest crossword puzzles you can get.
But, I mean, he was genuinely upset by it. Mm-hmm. And you could tell that it was sort of the beginnings of, if I'm getting a little bit of a cold, this is not helping things. We ended up getting off the bus because I had other stuff to do.
And Sirhat was on it.
He was sick. A lot of us were. You know, when you're 2 weeks in close proximity, working your butt off, and there's also a lot of social time. You're meeting a whole bunch of people from all over the world who are bringing in their pathogens from everywhere. A lot of cheek kisses, a lot of handshakes, and not enough Purell. Every year I come down with some form of a contest crud. I had the Austrian death flu in 2015 that luckily Derek was kind enough to scoop through all the local pharmacies to get me some crazy Austrian cough medicine that I still have nightmares over.
Austrian death flu was that Hungarian band that they sent years ago.
Oh, they were so good.
Austrian death flu, friend of the show.
Yep. But yeah, I mean, so yeah, Sirhat was sick. This is my long roundabout way of saying it.
And this resulted in him singing like a bass. He was very gravelly. Sounded like he ate nuts and bolts for breakfast.
Basically.
It did not sound good. And I say this as someone who is already critical of Say Na Na Na. This song was no longer listenable, period. His backup singers were doing great. They sounded great. They were dancing. It seemed like they were overselling it just to help him out.
Mm. His dancers were really fun.
Yeah.
They kind of made that.
They really were. It made him kind of look like a schmuck to be up there, sick, not doing his best. And not only not doing his best, but kind of not doing well. Really.
Yeah.
Well.
It really kind of felt like he went up and did that performance, and then he died like 5 minutes.
And then he staggered off, and they were just injecting him with every drug.
Yeah.
We have to keep this man alive.
So breaking down the scores.
Say Na 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 did not even do that bad.
In televoting, he got 65 points, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that was 10th in televoting.
More televote.
That's 10th in televoting. In jury, however, he came in 23rd place with 12 points altogether.
So was his voice even worse at the jury
it
final?
It was. He was actually had recovered a little bit between the jury final and the televised final. It wasn't going to trouble the top of the scoreboard either way. Sorry, Sirhat. But
that's Norway's job.
Do you think he might have moved to the left column?
Ooh, that's...
If the man had actually sung at his best, we have to acknowledge there is significant appeal to this song.
Yeah, there's...
an irony factor, and some people just don't have taste.
It looks like he would have needed, if I'm doing this right, between 30 and 35 points...
To move
to the left side of the table, so the top half.
That's
doable. If his voice had been pristine, studio quality, I think he could have made it to the left side.
And it's not just his voice, it's his energy.
Yeah.
It's his performance on stage.
He looked defeated.
These are two completely different performances by essentially two different artists, is what we're talking about.
Yeah, happy Sirhat and sad Sirhat.
This man didn't just have a head cold. This guy sounded... I cannot enunciate how much this guy... sounded bad in his performance. And even I acknowledge the man should have done better. The man's not bad.
That's growth.
I'm coming around to growth.
I'm maturing as a person.
Aww. You know what? Na 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 to you, Danny. Na 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 to you.
I'll say it.
Will you say na na na? Will you say na na na?
No.
Aww.
I'll sing it like he said, na na na.
There we are.
There it is. There it is.
That rounds out our list. If you guys at home have any ideas about this last year's contest, that you have any interesting or imaginative what-ifs that you've been wondering about, feel free to shoot those to us. We gave you the socials earlier, but once again, that's 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. That's where you can send all of your comments or...
check out our website, 12pointsfromamerica.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter, 12pointsUSA.
Talk to us. We're lonely. We're desperate. It's the summer.
Yeah, exactly.
We want to talk about Eurovision, and all of our friends are just won't listen to us. So
no. They're American.
Be our friend. Be a friend of the show.
Oh.
And with that, I'm Eric.
And I'm Samantha.
I'm Danny.
And America,
stop listening now.